And now for a special Island Life programme which recalls 25 years ago when nearly 80 Manx school children went to London to perform in the Millennium Dome. Here's Charles Gard.
Hello and welcome to half an hour of recollection and anecdotes as me and my guest here in the studio relive an extraordinary project we were all involved in 25 years ago this week. We were part of the team that brought together nearly 80 Manx schoolchildren and took them, assorted parents and helpers, off to London to perform in the Millennium Dome. Ah, that very controversial structure, built on the Greenwich Peninsula to celebrate the beginning of the third millennium. When it opened the previous year, it was the fifth largest building in the world by usable volume. But how was it used? Its grand exhibition was open to the public throughout 2000, but the project and exhibition were highly contentious and attracted barely half of the 12 million customers its sponsors forecasted. It was deemed a failure by the media and was seen to damage the careers of some of the Labour politicians who'd been involved with it. But 25 years on, those teething troubles have long since been forgotten. Now rebranded as the O2 Arena, it has an entirely new lease of life. And back in 2000, well, there was great excitement here on the Isle of Man, because the fast food chain McDonald's, which had opened its Manx branch the year before, was sponsoring an ambitious programme to fund nearly 200 local communities around Britain, and including the Isle of Man, to each create a 20-minute show promoting their area to take to London and perform on the Our Town stage. Local education authorities were to decide how to plan and deliver their contributions, and in each case, McDonald's provided £10,000 plus free travel and accommodation. So, me and my three guests here in the studio were tasked with making all this happen. I'm joined by Paul Crane, now a distinguished member of the Legislative Council, but 25 years ago had just started his career with the Department of Education as the coordinating advisor for secondary education. And it was Paul who had to pull all this together. Alex Brindley, now Director of Programming, News and Content here at Manx Radio in 2000, was aged just 22. He was working at the Steam Packet Company. Alex created and wrote the script for the show. And Louise Beckett, who specialises in leadership, communication and impact coaching, directed the whole amazing enterprise. And my own involvement was to produce the 20-minute video which formed the backdrop to the show. So welcome to you all. And Paul, can I begin with you and ask how you first heard about this project? You'd had a career in teaching, of course, but this was a new position for you in the department, wasn't it?
It was, yes. I'd taught for 20 years off Ireland and then down at Castle Rushen. And I moved to the department in the June of 1999. And I hadn't been there very long before it emerged that there was this offer on the desk for McDonald's for the Isle of Man to tell its story at the Dome. And the feeling was, gosh, this is going to involve a lot of work, but we can't turn down an offer for the Isle of Man to have a slot in this smaller theatre within the Dome, or for the opportunity for Manx students to go down. So it became quite clear that as the new boy who'd just arrived in the team, this was coming in my direction. Yes. So, I took on the task, really. And we had some sort of a brief from the project coordinators. And the one thing they said on it was that the show in the Dome, at this particular theatre, there was a lot of background noise. So it indicated there would be a problem with anything spoken on stage. You know, we'd have to think about how we were dealing with that. And that's where within the department we thought, well, it would be better if we could have a background video, but with sound built into the video so that no one would actually have to speak live on stage against whatever these problems were. But that's where we started recruiting others, really.
That's how I got involved. And I first met Alex and you in McDonald's on the Peel Road one morning in January, I think it was, 2000, was it, Alex?
Yes, I vividly remember us all being served bacon. They did like a bacon sandwich baguette or something at McDonald's back then. They don't do it anymore. And I think Charles, you commented, I think it was the first time you'd ever been in a McDonald's.
Yes.
You weren't particularly tempted by that, were you?
Well, as a vegetarian, no.
And we all had our photo taken outside for the paper in front of the McDonald's sign to acknowledge their sponsorship. And, I just remember Paul effectively laying out what a challenge this was. This is the reason we've kind of got you all together. This is what's required. And it was quite a gargantuan enterprise, especially bearing in mind that this is pre-smartphones. This is technology was not at the level it is now.
Effectively, you had to put 10,000 years of history into 20 minutes. And you'd worked in youth theatre, of course, when you were at school. You'd made videos and you went on to do more productions. What sources did you use?
I remember at the time being very impressed with the House of Manannan, which hadn't been open very long. And I thought that would be a good starting point. The way the House of Manannan was laid out at the time, it's very dated now, but it was very engaging. So I almost became a regular visitor going around taking notes. I remember when we did a TV program for behind the scenes of this, they had me sort of restaging, you know, just sitting in the museum with a clipboard taking notes, because 10,000 years to cram into 20 minutes. We did a very brief whistle stop tour of history, but I thought actually taking a pointer from what is at the time our most modern museum was a good starting point.
And Louise, had you ever directed 80 school children before? And you had to bring a team together for dancing and the costumes and the whole thing.
Well, Paul was very helpful introducing people to that. I saw an advert in the paper, and you advertised, didn't you, for a director and the other roles.
That's right.
And I phoned you up and said, have you ever done anything like this before? No. And that's how we started, isn't it? We met at the McDonald's that first time, and
we also had someone to write the music for us, which was to go with the film that was to tell the story that Alex was going to write and that Louise was going to direct. So it was a sort of circular thing, really. So Paul Dunderdale was appointed to write the music, did a great job. But I gather he's off Ireland at the moment, so can't be with us. But that was the team. And McDonald's for breakfast was the start of it.
So you also had Deborah Michaels and Susanna Hodgson doing choreography. And what was Deborah's role? You
Deborah
brought her over.
Played Carmen in Simon Callow's Carmen Jones at the Old Vic. And we were at drama school together and great friends. And Paul, you agreed to bring her over. She did a workshop on the Isle of Man with them on performance skills to get London theatre energy going. My role, I think, was to do a lot of improvisation with them and gel the 75 together as one team. And we started with a small core group, didn't we? And then introduced them to the larger group. And it was the summer holidays. Teachers didn't really want to get involved, understandably, in their summer holiday. We did everything with a skeleton staff.
Yes, that's right. In terms of the students, it was a difficult one because we wanted it to be open to as many students as possible, but there was no sense of sort of auditioning them because it was a 20-minute performance where they wouldn't actually have to speak, although they might mime something. So we didn't particularly need people who were accomplished actors of sorts, so long as they could follow an instruction clearly.
I designed a questionnaire which went out to any child that wanted to be part of the project. And what I was looking for was enthusiasm. And I can't remember how many people completed the questionnaires, but it was far more than the kids
that
were able to take.
Is that how you chose the children? Then?
Yes, yeah. The ones that spoke to me. And then I went into each of the schools and met them. And I think I got a short list at that point and then decided, which there had to be representative from each school. And some schools were a lot more enthusiastic than others or another.
I just remember that the structure of this, looking back at it, because as you say there was
When you're trying to design a show, which effectively was a musical with a multimedia backdrop, it had everything thrown into it. So we had this video that had to be produced that interacted with the stage show. The characters on the stage show had to effectively mime to their own pre-recorded words. But in terms of telling a story, most shows or musicals have a core cast and a chorus. And trying to craft a show that told a story with a cast of 80 effectively is very difficult to, number one, write and envisage, but also number two, from your perspective, is direct it and pull it together, because who is the storyteller, which one of the kids is doing this, and trying to ensure that everybody got something out of it, as opposed to a cast of four or five and then the rest of them just standing in the background singing like you would have got out of an old-fashioned musical. Was very difficult.
And I wanted to think of arts in the broadest terms. So who was keen on visual arts? Who wanted to help create a set? And we mustn't forget Julie Fayle, who did a wonderful job taking the ones that wanted to paint and do the art to Macleod, to research the Celtic crosses.
Yes, she did, got them all up there, because we mentioned that there was a television programme done, Border TV, and there's a lovely shot of her with the children up at the cross house.
Yes.
And then they produced crosses, which were props, and a Viking ship, which was taken down.
Which is amazing.
You talked about who's narrating it. Well, we actually chose that archetypal Manxman, John Kenyuk. Many people will remember him with enormous affection. He was from farming stock, a proud local commissioner, Methodist local preacher, broadcaster, and a great ambassador for the island. And he had a gift of a great radio voice. He, reading your script here, Alex, he was Manannan. And let's just hear just a moment of John telling us who he is.
I am Manannan, guard and protector to this isle. I am the spirit that exists in this beautiful land. I am the sun that warms your face, the water that laps your shore. I exist in the earth and in the air.
So you wrote all that marvellous stuff.
I obviously did, yes.
But we had John as a back projection. Fortunately, a couple of years earlier, I had made The Isle of Man from the Air with Duke Video. So we had lots and lots of fabulous helicopter footage. And I was working with Duke, so we had lots of footage to go at. But we had to film John because he did appear. And we had what's known as a green screen, but it was done in the horse stable at your house, Alex, as I recall.
Yes, this was really quite surreal, because I remember we tried doing some initial footage of John dressed as Manannan within the house of Manannan, because I thought that's where I got my inspiration from. And when we saw the footage afterwards, it didn't kind of work. You know, it's the kind of thing that on paper sounded great, but when you looked at him standing there, it didn't come across to anybody who'd not been to the house of Manannan. So, yes, we went down the route of that at my parents' house there was some old stables, and we painted the back wall green. And this surreal day of getting John down there in full costume, he was costume made up in his cloak, and the camera shot was tight enough on him that you couldn't see the bales of the straw and everything else that was all around his feet. And I vividly remember us trying to get him into his costume, or giving him a costume change, and my mum turning up with a tray of tea, just looking across the stable door, finding this film crew and this poor guy half dressed trying to get into a Manannan costume, as if to say, what the heck are they filming here? The behind the scenes was very different to what actually appeared on the screen.
So all that was put together. I had the tapes and two big machines, and Paul, we then all went to London. Now, presumably you had to organise accommodation. I think we stayed in a youth hostel in Rotherhithe, is that right?
We did, that's right. We brought into the team there Steve Brooks, who was a youth worker, and Steve's task was really to help us manage 80 young people and the other events. So we had this sum of money from McDonald's. I can't remember if we had access to the theatre the day before.
No, we didn't.
But we had the children down for a couple of days.
Yes.
Mostly secondary age, I think, weren't they? 11 to sort of 14, 15, something like that.
Year 8, most of them.
Yes, okay. And
And we entertained them because you took them to Chessington Zoo.
That's right. We took them to
burn the energy off.
Yeah, that night.
It wasn't apparent. Yeah. Was it?
It was good, and we took them on the London Eye, and that was quite an experience. I remember being in one of the pods on the London Eye. I think I was maybe the only adult in the group with about a dozen or more young people, about 12 or 13-year-olds. And in the pod next to us going round on the London Eye was a film crew filming the tweenies, you know. So this group were all, it's the tweenies, you see. So they were, never mind the views of London, they were fixed on it. And then they finished filming and Grandpa Tweeny took his head off and was a woman. And this group of youngsters, they were practically fainting. You know, it's a woman. It was a memorable event.
So anyway, on the day of the show, as Louise has said, we didn't have any access to the theatre beforehand. Seeing the board of film and seeing the film that the Dome team themselves did of the show, the lighting all fits together wonderfully. I mean, how much time did you have on the stage before the first performance?
Very little. It was a tech, really, just a walkthrough. And they'd given us the spec beforehand, so we had mapped out Cronkyberry School Hall so that we had our proportions. The kids were brilliant and they had worked to the spec. And then you just had to go and do it.
We had to, do I recall, was my memory playing tricks on me? We had effectively one run through before the Dome opened. So first thing in the morning, did we have
I think it was a tech.
Yeah.
It wasn't really performance.
No, it was.
I do remember the two big tape recorders I'd taken down from Duke's, one as a spare. I put the master tape in, which had all the music, the sound and the scripts and everything on it, and it wouldn't play. This was, half past 7 or 8 in the morning, and I thought, right, this is just finished everything. I rang Duke's and I got one of the technical people, and they said, well, it could be a little bit of condensation on the heads, because that's how things were in those days, because it was quite chilly that morning in October. And fortunately, gosh, it cleared, and after about 10 minutes, it started to play.
You didn't mention that to any of us on the day.
No,
did you? It did to me.
Oh, right, okay.
I was panicking. Was it three performances they did?
Three performances, yeah.
And there was a pretty good crowd of Manx people there as well, wasn't there?
Yes, the flags being waved. Steve Roden, and he came down. I think the director was down with us, so they'd come down to see one of the performers.
Well, Steve was minister, of course.
Yes, that's right. So it was quite an event. We had a green room, didn't we? And I had to give them a sort of pep talk to wind them up, ready to get on. And we did that. But they were up for performing this. You know, they were ready for it. You know? I don't think anyone put a foot wrong. You mentioned John Kenyuk before, and I think John did a fantastic role. One of the things I still remember from the film, that presumably you had written this in, but John, in that wonderful Mananan voice that he was putting on, made the comment that whoever loves the Isle of Man is Manx. And that's a strong statement, really, that it is still around today, you know, and that's it was great to hear him say that. Yeah, well written, Alex. Yeah.
Thank you. I remember, Paul, you sent me down, once we'd had the McDonald's gathering, you sent me down earlier in the year to, you know, just have a day at the Dome. And this was my first time catching the tube. I got to Heathrow. I caught the tube in to see the Dome. I spent the whole day at the Dome and then flew back. And I wandered around with a notebook, very much like, you know, the Dorothy no longer in Kansas, sort of a gog at the place.
We kind of had some reservation. I mean, my worry at the time that I was beginning to assemble the team, I think before we got to McDonald's bit, was that the Dome wasn't ready. You know, it wasn't complete. I think the day before it actually opened, they were still painting bits of it and things like this, you know. So it was a worry as to whether this would happen or not, but we had to proceed in faith, really.
And then we were towards the end of the year, and in the summer, there was some question as to whether it was even going to be still open in time for us.
We mustn't forget, and I'm astonished when I saw the programme recently, the music, because Paul had an amazing job, Paul Dunderdale, to write 20 minutes of continuous music with all sorts of different styles, the great opening fanfare, and then there was the Celtic and the Vikings and stuff. I did speak to him earlier, and he recalled the writing of the rock song. Mm-hmm. Alex had written a rock song when we got to the financial sector, the history of the finance on the Isle of Man. And Paul recalled how when Border TV came over to do part of their documentaries, this was all being put together, how the filming went at his house in the Currachs.
My studio's long and narrow, and I work at the end of it, so they couldn't get a decent shot of me. The computer screen was in the way if they came head-on, so they had to go sideways on through the window, which was quite entertaining. I don't know whether they even used that shot, but it gave us some amusement, shall we say, while they tried to find an angle.
Well, they did feature you and your son, Ben, who worked with you to compose a rock song to depict the modern Isle of Man and the finance sector. Here's that bit from the film.
Well, I was given the lyrics to work with by Alex Brindley, who's done all the scripting, and he said, you know, we want a rock song, so I've just done my best, really, to do that.
We talked it through and figured that it's got to reflect the reality of the Isle of Man's work. It's easy to be Beatrix Potter about the Isle of Man, but I don't think business would be happy if we portrayed them as being soft. It's a hard song. The words are quite hard, but it's about the real reality of business, I think. And I think he's got that in sound, that sounds really very positive.
It was 20 minutes of continuous music. What sort of a challenge was that?
Quite a challenge, but because the show was in sections, you could work to the sections and then edit them together. So the sections were clear enough that they would have a specific musical intent. It's fine.
You had to go through various styles. I'm particularly struck by the opening fanfare. In those days, of course, we didn't have what we have today, the great orchestral samples you could buy. How did you produce those trumpets?
I didn't. Mr. Roland did. I used a Roland synthesizer for them and basically used the sounds that were there. I didn't have time to edit them. So
you
were about 520-odd sounds to choose from, so plenty of chance.
The young Alex Brindley wrote the script. Well, what was your reaction when you first saw all of that?
I thought it was comprehensive. It dealt with the Isle of Man from beginning to end, really. And it was well written, and it worked very well for the kids. And it was well enough sectioned that I could work, as I say, in sections to do it. So I was very impressed. And for a young man, it was very well done, I thought.
So we all went down to London. Now, what's your memories of that trip?
Chaos. 7 a.m. and Alex Brindley still smiling, which amused me, but I'm not a morning person. I could have taken offence at some of the smiles. Lovely man doing his thing. What else do I remember? I was fortunate that the family came with me because Ben was playing, so Matthew and Jill came along. And at the Chessington theme park, I remember, we've got a picture somewhere of Matthew sliding down the flume with his arm in plaster. So all we've got is a very dark picture with this white sling. In the dome itself, I was surprised in the morning. Some friends from the early 80s on the Isle of Man who'd left for work turned up. They had about a four-hour window. And they came, despite the fact they were flying out to the Middle East to do some irrigation work, they came to see us, which was lovely. And then I bumped into an ex-pupil, Adam Brown, who I'd taught him music technology and music to A-level. And he was doing sound for the Dome, so he gave us tickets for the Dome show, which was very nice. We enjoyed that.
There was actually quite a good Manx contingent turned up, and when you see the Border TV programme, towards the end you see all these Manx flags waving in the audience. It was quite an emotional occasion.
It was, yeah. I didn't get a chance to get caught up in the emotions much because, of course, you're dealing with the technology, you know, watching it, making sure it works and worrying about the response, because as composers we're very insecure people, aren't we?
So how many rehearsals did you attend? Because the children had to get round all your music, of course.
Not very many. I had very little time, so I was throwing the music out and sending it off to Louise, and she was doing the rehearsal with it. And you, I think, did the final edit, put everything together with the videos and so on. I was throwing it out to you as well. So, yeah, I didn't see much of it. It was quite a surprise to see the whole show.
I'm planning to put this up on YouTube because doing this programme has been a revelation to me. There's so much I've forgotten. And actually seeing the whole thing, it is very impressive. And I think, and I'm sure you'd agree, it really did put the Isle of Man in a very favourable light.
I think so, yeah. The kids really enjoyed it. You could tell that from their response. And the audience all seemed to enjoy it if you stood at the door as one did to sort of pick up the vibe. Mm. It was full, I think, every time it was on. Mm. Four performances?
Three.
Was it?
Three.
I couldn't remember. And it filled up and people really enjoyed it, I think. I hope.
Well, I was talking there to Paul Dunderdale, and just to go back to the Border TV programme, they interviewed some of the children as they came off the stage at the end of the final performance, and they were really on a high. Let's listen to what some of them had to say.
It is amazing. You just got adrenaline, you just got this scream. Like, I'm really, really happy, and I'm just really chilled because, like, it's all over, but I'm happy.
It's quite sad, really, because, like, it's all finished, and that was the last one, so, but it was really good for them doing that. But the performance was really good, and it's going to be a real shame that it's finished, because I've met so many people, made so many friends. It's been really, really good.
So, obviously, it had a great impression on them all, and as you said, Paul, the Minister for Education was there, and this is what he had to say.
It's been a real credit to the young people. They can be feel very proud of themselves, and anybody from the Isle of Man, and there are a number down from the Isle of Man and a number of Manx people who live in the London area who have visited, I think they'd be very, very proud of what they saw.
And after the show, there was a further treat. Didn't we all go to see a West End show?
Buddy.
We did, that's right, yes. Oh. Yes, and our young people were dancing in the aisles as much as anyone else at the theatre, I recall.
What was it, Louise?
Buddy.
Buddy, oh Buddy yes, Holly. The Buddy yeah. Holly story.
I just remember the actor who played Buddy and Buddy Holly, his knees. I don't know if he had to do that every night because of the dance move. Crikey.
How many nights did we spend in the Rotherhithe? Because there was a certain festive atmosphere, I remember, trying to get everybody to bed on the night before. It's a bit wild, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's where Steve Brooks came into his own, really. That was his task. Steve, I think he drove a lorry down because you mentioned before the Viking ship. Mm. I think that came...
It must have done, because of all the costumes and the crosses and everything.
But I don't think that was something that was...
It wasn't a... Or was it a removal van?
It was some sort of removal.
There was a worry, what if it doesn't turn up? Yes. What if there's a boat problem?
Yeah, absolutely.
They seem to go every day in those days.
The logistics, actually, when you think back, because it's not just a case of take some people down there and do some acting. Yeah, we had to ship the sets that they, as well as the people and the costumes and everything else for just what was, an hour's worth of performance, three 20-minute productions. It was a big deal back then, crikey.
It was a huge enterprise to put together with all those elements we've talked about. And I think the kids really enjoyed it. And looking back at the programme, it's really, really quite emotional. I'll just say that I am going to put the Border TV programme up, which is really good and really positive about the Isle of Man. I'm going to put that up on my YouTube channel. It was presented by Eric Wallace, who you may remember, and he was very positive about the island. He revealed that our unemployment rate was a mere 0.05% and that the Manx economy had a phenomenal growth rate of 13.5% in those days, which he claimed put it ahead of the UK and the new Celtic Tiger Island. Mm-hmm. So things were looking up 25 years ago, and I think we certainly gave the Isle of Man a tremendous promotion down at the Dome. We're just going to end as we finish with the final song, which Alex was a tourist song. You rewrote the words. I don't want to go to Idaho. I don't want to go to Tennessee. And the kids were all dressed in their wonderful Victorian costumes. The whole ensemble was on stage, and it was just brilliant.
I look back on it all, and the feeling of positivity and can-do attitude, which just doesn't seem to be around anymore, sadly, and locally especially. I can't imagine doing something like this now that in the same way it was done then. I don't think the support and the feeling is behind this kind of enterprise. It does bring a lump to your throat when you think back and you start watching those border TV programmes. A mixture of what a wonderful time it was for those few months of putting all that together, very intense, and also how young we all looked on that programme. Oh, it's terrible. And Charles, your sunglasses when you were interviewed, I don't know who advised you on that one.
Deeply embarrassing. And Paul, it must have been a great relief to you to get everybody back on the Isle of Man.
Huge relief, yeah, that it the whole thing went well. And
yes.
Yeah, I remember the coach that I was on. I was given a tea towel signed by everybody at the end of it. It's lovely. That's still at home somewhere, yeah. But, yeah, it was tremendous to get the whole thing finished. And then Louise suggested we needed to perform this in the Isle of Man for parents. So we did it at the Villa Marina.
Oh, that's right.
And you twisted my arm and persuaded me to compare for this. And, that was a great evening too, you know, as we attempted to repeat this on the Villa stage and so on, and with the back screen and everything else. But yeah, it was great to get to the end of it and get everybody back. Yeah.
And Louise, it was probably one of the highlights of your career.
Of course.
Does anyone still have the model of the dome? Didn't we get like a model that was like a clay model from the dome in a box? And I remember mine
was only plastic.
Oh, was it plastic? Sorry.
It looked like a huge cake.
Yeah, I think so.
It looked like a huge cake, and I've still got mine somewhere. I wouldn't have binned it, but I do remember the number of times I had to the famous sort of stanchions that come out of the dome in London, now the O2, the number of times they snapped off and I had to super glue them back on. So I think after a few years, mine were pointing in all weird and wonderful directions.
And now to the Department of Education, it's moved its headquarters a couple of times since 2000, but out at Tice Llewellyn there's one of the rooms there, one of the meeting rooms, that still has the small glass. It's about 6 inches high or something, but it's a sort of glass plaque type thing that stands up, and it's the McDonald's Our Town Story Isle of Man.
Oh, great.
It's still there. It's still on show, although I'm not sure there's anybody there that would remember what it related to, really, but it's good to see it.
Well, Louise Beckett, Paul Crane, Alex Brindley, thank you very much for bringing all those memories back and for taking part in, I think, a tremendously successful promotion for the Isle of Man 25 years ago. Thank you.
That programme was produced and presented by Charles Gard.